Okay, we're holding on Yud Amud Aleph at the top. Yeah, the very first word, Itmar. We learned yesterday. We started with the sugya of Pesach Pasuach. We said that Rav Elazar had said that if the chassan claims Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, then that's enough to aser his wife to him under certain circumstances. In the case where a single suffix would be enough to make her aser to him, namely either he's a kohen or she was niskadish when she was less than three and now she's older. Then we mentioned towards the end, we said that Shmuel had said that he's Naaman, that if he says Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, he's believed in so far as she loses her, as she can lose her ksuba, or it can be reduced, as the case may be.
In the case he says Pesach Pasuach.
If he says Pesach Pasuach. Again, in both these cases, we're talking... So that's the thing. In both these, that's the thing. Part of the question is how he should know that it's Pesach Pasuach. We're going to get to that soon. But the other issue is that in these cases, we're talking about she's not counterclaiming anything. If she was claiming in return, either, for example, she might claim, yes, there's a Pesach Pasuach, but it happened before we were ever in the Scottish, that's one thing. Or if she claims that it's not Pesach Pasuach at all, you're just, it's a subjective thing, or whatever. There's a lot of possibilities. And remember, also, Rashi had pointed out that usually you would also have the question of dumming. Here, what it is that, you know, he himself is saying, I'm not sure what the story is as far as dumim, as far as blood, because the cloth got lost. If he actually had tainas dumim, which we mentioned at the end yesterday and we'll talk more about today, that's a stronger claim because that's a very objective thing. You can look and see, is there blood or isn't there?
Well, you can find it. The cloth is dead.
That's the question. If there was blood, it should be there, yeah. Which actually, so we mentioned yesterday, Tosfos had mentioned a couple of different opinions. Rambam also discusses the question of, how does all this apply to a begeris? An adult woman, does she necessarily have, can you necessarily be claiming Pesach Pasuach with an adult woman? Not necessarily. She's larger. The Pesach is also larger. Not necessarily. Is it going to be quite so sosum as it would be by a younger woman?
Pesach Pasuach
literally means an open door. Means that he finds her not a virgin. He finds that she's not. He finds that he doesn't feel the expected expected resistance or tightness or whatever that you should in a basula. But in a bergeres, in an adult woman, not necessarily would you find that anyway. On the other hand, you would expect to find blood. That's another reason why the taina of no blood is a stronger taina. On the other hand, that Rambam mentioned, Tosfos had also mentioned that there are goyim that some of the goyim and rishonim learned the other way around, that a begeres you can claim a claim of Pesach Pasuach is a valid claim, a claim of domim is not a valid claim, and that Rambam argues against that. Anyway. Itmar. So now we were in the middle of the discussion. So why is it? Why are we saying that if he claims Pesach Pasuach, why do we believe him insofar? Why do we believe him to the extent that that he can make her lose her ksuba? So Itmar. So they said, Amar of Nachman Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rav Shimon Elazar, Chachamim Tiknu Lahem Levnos Yisrael of Sula Masayim V'Laman Amana. It's the Chachamim who made the takana for Jewish women that a psula gets for her ksuba 200 zuz and an amana gets 100 zuz. The Heim Haminu and those same Chachamim who made that Chakana, they also say that he can be believed, Shimama Pesach Pasuach Matzasi Naaman, that if he claims Pesach Pasuach, that he's believed and she forfeits that amount. If he's claiming she's not a Basula. So the question is, so then what did the Chachamim accomplish with their Takana? You're going to say that Absula is supposed to get 200, but what's he going to do? You're going to believe him to say that Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. He's going to do that, and then he's always going to claim to try and get out of paying 100 zuz. Amar Rava, chazaka einanam tereach b'sildur mafsida. Because we have a chazaka that a person is not going to spend a lot of money and time on a suda, in other words, then go through with the whole wedding, and then ruin it. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, if it was a false accusation, if he's just making this accusation because he hates her, he wouldn't have gone through with the wedding in the first place. He wouldn't have gone to all the trouble of making a wedding and making a suda and so forth, only to afterwards. He would have just lachatchila after the erusin, he would have divorced her at some point when he realizes he doesn't like her.
So that he has a migui.
I don't know if we call it a migui really, but it amounts to okay. But the chazaka at this point, once he went through with the marriage, the chazaka is he's doing that he really does like that he really does like her, but he has this claim Pesach Pasuach, so we gotta look into it.
I mean, he's upset about it.
Well, now he's upset.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why would he say that, since he makes him a suda, he wouldn't return?
No, he's not going to be mafsida deliberately, but if he... if he found after the Suda and after everything is done, he did the first Ve'ila and he found Pesach Pesuach, okay, you know, there's reason to assume that he's making a truthful claim, or at least that he thinks he's making a truthful claim. Let's put it that way. Again, you know, we still have to discuss the issue how he knows that it's Pesach Pesuach anyway, again, given that's kind of a subjective thing. But at least to his way of thinking, it's Pesach Pesuach, and he's not going to do that unless he has reason to think that that's a true claim.
Even if the claim is not true, in other words?
No, not even if it's not true. We're assuming it's true, because otherwise he wouldn't deliberately go and make a false claim.
Right,
that's what we're saying. Tana, we learn in a braisa, speaking of the takana of ksuba, hoyol uknas chachamim, who, since the whole concept of the ksuba is a knas of the chachamim, it's a fine that the chachamim penalize the chassan, loy tigbe elamin aziburis. Therefore, when the kala comes to collect, when the kala or the woman, whatever, many years later, comes to collect her ksuba, if she's going to be collecting it out of land, she's only entitled to ziburis, the lowest quality, the lowest quality land.
Because she shouldn't have.
No, meaning in other words, since.
No.
All we're saying is, given that the whole thing is only a knas anyway. We're going to say in a second. What do we mean a knas? I mean, let's look in the next line. What do you mean knasa? My knasa. What do you mean? What knas? What did the chassan do wrong over here that we're penalizing him? So Rabbi Yaakov Evden points out in his notes in the back of the Gemara that in a way, yes, it is sort of meant as a penalty to prevent the whole reason why we have a ksuba is shall I take kala be'ein of la'itzia. You don't want a guy will marry a woman and then it'll be very easy for him to divorce her. You want to make there's a financial penalty involved. So yes, you could say that it's a penalty, so to speak, like for people who do such a thing deliberately, who would marry a woman and then immediately divorce her. But okay, the Gemara doesn't really like that answer. Ella Ema, what it really means is Hayov Takanas Chachamim. Since the Ksuba is only a Takana of the Chachamim, therefore Letigba Elamin is Ziburis. Therefore, she's only entitled to collect from Ziburis.
When
she collects the Ksuba. If she's going to collect from land.
Later on.
Later on, when he divorces her or he dies, yeah.
He's going to wait all these years.
Yeah. In other words, what we're saying is like this.
When fully died and so collect this Ksuba on
it. Yeah.
So why don't we say the same about our case?
No, the point is this is kind of a new statement. This business about it being a knas or takana or whatever is not really directly related to what we were saying before. Since we mentioned the takana of the chachamim, that's 200 for a psula and 100 for an almana, incidentally we're mentioning another din about
it. That it means a lot. It means that he could have, based on the fact that they impose a knas, that means to prevent that he has a bad intent, so we could also apply to us.
No, because the whole point is we're saying in this case he's neman lafsidu ksubasa. That he. That,
he said
wait,
he didn't
wait, one second. Let
him finish. Yeah, we're saying over here, according to Shmuel, if he claims pesach pesuach matzati, he's believed and she loses her ksuba.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And in the case of the
knas, so what we're saying,
Chachamim, they did a knas because they didn't want him to.
Because they didn't want. No. Not they didn't. They didn't want lachatchila that a person is going to marry a woman and then all of a sudden and then shortly afterward decide I don't like her. But here, in Adam Terech b'Sodom Mafsida, if he hated her to the extent that he would be claiming Pesach Pesuach falsely, he wouldn't have gone through with the whole wedding to begin with. No, you don't want, shall I take Kalabain of Lysia? It doesn't mean necessarily right after the wedding. It means in general, a couple is in marriage for 35 years, you don't want that it should be very easy for him to divorce her when he doesn't like her.
They have time to fight it.
But in this case, if he claims Pesach Pesuach right after the wedding, the day after the wedding, we have to, there's reason to assume that it's a valid claim.
We'll take out of this.
In other words, the wedding is a sort of,
I don't know what you mean by sort of knas.
The amount that he paid for the wedding is an incentive not to just walk away.
No, it's not really an incentive. We're not talking about an incentive. We're saying that a chazaka, a normal person, is not going to spend all that money on a wedding, and then, yeah.
Yeah, but he waits 35 years, to save the $100.
So you know what? We might as well talk about over here. How much is the ksuba worth in modern terms? Yeah. Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva about it that he wrote in 1980. He discusses the various values that the ksuba had in different times. The truth is, if you look at a ksuba nowadays, you'll find It starts by saying in there that you have 200 zuz for a besula, the chazi lichim idaraisa, that's suitable for you apitora, which by the way is a machloikus rishonim. I'll get back to that in a second. Whether it's daraisa or the rabbanon, we'll get back to that based on the next piece of gemara. But anyway, and then you continue with the extra amount that the chazan took on himself. Sachakol, it says in present day ksubas, mosayim zkukim kesef tsarif, 200 zkukim of pure silver. So the Moshe goes into a whole long thing, making a calculation of how much that's worth in modern terms. He writes that 200 zkukim of pure silver would be, he says, 100 pounds of silver. When he wrote the Struva, silver was, so when he wrote the Struva in 1980, silver was about $50 an ounce. $50 an ounce, which comes, yeah, silver was about $50 an ounce in 1980. So it came out at the time, So I made the cheshbon. In his time, it came out the amount you're talking about is around $50,000. Nowadays silver is around $20 an ounce. So you're talking about $20,000-$25,000.
How many ounces?
16. So
1,600 ounces.
1,600 ounces times 50. Okay, in those days it would have been when he wrote the struva, it would have been about $80,000. Now it would be about $30,000 or so. But still, you're talking a substantial chunk of money.
No, now it's more.
Now it's less than it was. Okay,
like 25,
30. Yeah, now it's about $20 an ounce. No, come on, let's not get into spot prices over here. But anyway, yeah.
Okay. That is a lot of money, though.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah. So that's what we're saying. In other words, but we're saying, by the way, since it is only a takana of the chachamim, if it was daraisa, we say that then she might have the right to collect from idis, from the best quality property, or at least from beninis, the medium quality. Since it's only drabonon, and since also the Gemara points out in a few other places, a woman needs less of an incentive to marry than a man does. We learned at the end of Yevamos the famous expression, tav lemesav tandum lemesav armalu, a woman would rather at least be married, then therefore she doesn't need such an incentive, therefore she's only entitled to ziburis. On the other hand, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that the ksuba is actually min atora. The question is, really did Rav Shimon Gamliel say that? V'hatanya, but we learn in a braisa, when the pasuk says, Kesef Yishko Kamar Absolus, this week's parasha, that a man seduces a woman, the pasuk says he has to marry her, and if he doesn't want to marry her, Kesef Yishko Kamar Absolus, he should pay money according to the moihar of the solus, of unmarried girls. Moihar means the dowry. This means the amount that he pays has to be the equivalent of the dowry, meaning the ksuba of a basula, or moisa absolus, kazeh. And conversely, when a basula gets married, she gets a ksuba as much as the amount we're saying here, which is 50 shkolim, it says there. 50 shkolim, it says in the pasuk. Actually, Rashi explains what it is we have the pasuk in this parasha that mentions, you have the pasuk in this parasha that mentions mefate, you have the pasuk in parashas kisei that mentions an ones, somebody who rapes a girl. There it says 50 slaim, 50 shkolim, so it's the same thing by mefate, 50 shkolim, and in turn, that 50 shkolim becomes the amount for a besula. 50 shkolim is those four zuz, or dinar, it's zuz and a dinar are the same, or two different names for the same coin. There's four of them to the shekel, so 50 times 4 comes out to 200. There's your 200 zuz. Mikan sam chacham luksubas ishim in atorah. From here, the chachamim made a smach, a support for the idea of a ksuba of a woman min atorah. And from this pasuk, from kesef yishko kamar absolus. And the Braisa continues, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Meksuba Seisha Eina Medivar Torah, Ela Medivar Seifim. Here in that Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel says just the opposite. No, not Minat Torah, it's only Midrabanan. So you have a contradiction. You're saying first, the first Braisa had said that Rav Shimon Gamliel says that it's Minat Torah, the second Braisa is saying it's Drabanan. The answer is, April. Flip around the opinions in the second Braisa. In the second Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel is the one who's saying it's Daraisa. He's the one who's quoting the Pasuk Kesef Yishko Kamar Absolus. And the Rabbanon are arguing with him and saying it's only the Rabbanon. Question is, my chazas to apchis basraisa epo kamaisa? Why are you flipping around the second braisa? Flip around the first one. Say that Rav Shimon Gamliel is his opinion that it's always the Rabbanon.
Yep.
The answer is, Hashaminen leil Rav Shimon Gamliel to amak subas ishimidaraisa. No, because we actually find elsewhere, we find explicitly Rav Shimon Gamliel saying that a ksuba is the raisa. We learn in a Mishnah, the last Mishnah of our Masechta, Rav Shimon Gamliel, and Nois Lamimor is Kaputkia. The Mishnah talks about a case over there. Now, you had in those days, Among the, yet there was Eretz Yisrael, and there was another country, which is nowadays in Turkey, called Taputkia. They had the same units of currency in Eretz Yisrael and Taputkia, the shkalim or sloyim or whatever it was, or zuzim, but the ones in Taputkia were heavier. Maybe the economy was better there, so they were able to have heavier coins with more silver, whatever it is. So suppose you have a case then, the Mishnah talks about, if you have a case of a couple that got married in one of those places and divorced in the other, which coins, if it's said in the Ksuba that you have to pay her, for example, 200 zuzim, which kind of zuzim? Eretz Yisrael zuzim, which are lighter, or Kaputkia zuzim, which are heavier? So the Mishnah mentioned the Machloikas over there. If they got married in Kaputkia and divorced in Eretz Yisrael, if they lived their whole married life in Eretz Yisrael, there's no question it's Eretz Yisrael coins. If they lived the whole time in Kaputkia, there's no question it's Kaputkia coins. But if they got married in Kaputkia, divorced in Eretz Yisrael, then you have a Machloikas. The Tanakhama says you go Lakula and you give her only Mois Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, you have to give her Mois Kaputkia.
It's more expensive.
Which is more expensive.
It's cheaper.
Right, well, the point is, Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that it's Daraisa, therefore, yes, it's just like a milna, it's like any loan that you took out, and therefore you have to pay her with the Kaputkia money. So we see Rav Shimon Gamliel obviously holds Daraisa. Because we only brought these braises incidentally, because we brought the first braise to say that because Subas Isha is only Takana de Rabbanan, therefore Ziburis, and we said, by the way, Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees. Then we said, how does he disagree? Don't we have a second braise? And therefore we have to bring the Mishnah in order to prove the point. The Ibrahim Kula Rav Shimon Gamliel, or you could answer that you don't have to flip around the Braises. The second Braise is all Rav Shimon Gamliel's statement, and it's missing words, Vahaki Katani. What it means is like this. We brought the Pasuk, Kasif Yishko Kamara Rav Solis, we can't some Chacham Laksubas Isha Minatara. From here, the Chachamim made a support for the idea that Ksubas Isha is Minatara. On the other hand, here's the missing part. Ksubas Almana Eina Medivar Terya El Medivar Seifim. The Ksuba of an Almana, the 100 Zuz, is not Minatara, it's only Medrabanan. Shed Shimon Gamliel Eimer, Ksubas Almana Eina Medivar Terya El Medivar Seifim. That's the part that Shimon Gamliel says. When he says in the second Braisa, that Ksubas Isha is not Minatara, only Midrabanan, he doesn't mean Ksubas Isha in general. He means the Ksuba of an Almana. Now, so who is the halacha like? Is the halacha like the Chachamim, or is the halacha like Rav Shimon Gamliel? It turns out to actually be a machlokas Rishonim as well. The Rambam, for example, paskins that it's the Rabbanan. Tosfos over here discusses that it's Daraisa, and Ad HaYom Hazeh, you have a difference in that regard between Sfaradish and Ashkenazish Ksubas. First of all. So the Rambam explains like this. In those days, besides Eretz Yisrael and Kaputkia that we just talked about, they had two different kinds of coins, two different kinds of zuzim. We'll learn about them later in the Masechta. They're called Kesef Tzuri and Kesef Medina. Kesef Tzuri is coins that they struck in Sur, in Tyre, which is nowadays in Lebanon. They were pure silver, or almost pure silver anyway. Then you had Kesef Medina, which is what they used in various other places, including, I guess, parts of Eretz Yisrael, which were most of them were base metal. Each coin would be seven parts copper and one part silver. So a Kesef Medina Zuz would be worth 1/8 of a Kesef Tzuri Zuz. Now, if we say that the 200 Zuz are Daraisa, then it means Kesef Tzuri, because that's the only kind that existed in the times when the Torah was given. So therefore, it means 200 Zuz of pure silver. On the other hand, if you say that it's Midrabanan, then it could be Kesef Medina, and the Rambam says indeed so. That therefore it's only 200 zuzim of Kesef Medina, which would be the equivalent of what? 25 zuzim of Kesef Tzuri. 200 divided by 8.
Yeah, look.
Well, he's talking for Ashkenazim. When he says he was talking about the Masayim's Kukim that we write. And I don't know if in Sfarad Shekhsuvim they write Masayim's Kukim Kesef Tzoruf. In Ashkenazi Shekhsuvim, they write that the 200 Zuz, the Chazi Lichim Yaraisa, which are suitable to Yumin Atarda, which, by the way, according to the Summer Rishonim, you shouldn't be writing that in a Ksuvah, because according to them, it's Dirabonim. Others of them argue that even if it's the Rabbanon, maybe not necessarily like the Rambam, does that mean it would be Kesef Medina? Maybe it could be the Rabbanon, but it would still be Kesef Tzuri. So you can still write Dechazi Lichim Yidaraisa. Anyway, I believe that nowadays in Sfarad Shekhsuvim they don't write Dechazi Lichim Yidaraisa. Anyway, but an Ashkenazic Ksubas, after that, they continue with, besides the 200 zuz that he owes her, Midaraisa, you mention all the various other obligations of the chassan, then you mention the nadin that the kala brought in, v'dein neduni d'hanol aslami be'bayla, etc., etc. Hakol kibol ol chassandinan, v'hoisifla, and he added on his own, so therefore it comes out, the whole thing comes out to Mosayim Skukim Ketzif Sorif. The figure that Ramosha gave of 100 pounds of silver is the Mosayim Skukim, is the total. The Ikuk Ksuba, the Tosfos, the Tosfos, that extra amount that the Chosin himself pledges to give, as well as what he owes the Kala afterwards for the Nadin, for the Nixit and Barzal.
Has to add a Tosfos?
No, but in standard Ksubas nowadays, that's how it's written. And by the way, when we said before that the chassan is believed to say is that we believe the chassan, if he says Pesach Masuach Matzasi, that she loses her ksuba, many Rishonim say she does not lose the Tosfos. The Ikka ksuba maybe, or at least 100 zuz out of it because she's not a psula. But the Tosfos, which she voluntarily added, that she still keeps. Others of them argue not. The whole purpose of the Tosfos is he himself voluntarily wants to add as an expression of how much he loves her and how much he wants to be with her. Well, if he's arguing Pesach Pesuach and he's claiming that she's also to him, maybe he shouldn't be on the hook for the Tosfos.
Well, he didn't know that before.
No, but now that he knows. Tosfos points out another detail over here. Again, you have to ask the question over here, what exactly, if he says Pesach Pesuach Matzasi and we're saying that she loses her ksuba, what is she losing exactly? If she's losing the whole ksuba, then fine, maybe you could say you believe him because of the chazaka, if all he's doing is trying to get himself off the hook for 100, he's trying to claim, we're going to have later on in a couple of days, the machlokas, whether in these cases of Pesach Pesuach or whatever, whether she loses the whole ksuba or whether she only loses 100, if he's only claiming she's lost 100 out of the ksuba, well, then that's not tereach besoda or mafsida, he's not being mafsid anything, so therefore you shouldn't believe him. Also, other Mefarshim talk about the question. The Taz, for example, talks about the question nowadays, or at least in his times, where it was much more common that the Kala's family made the Suda rather than the Chosin. Do we say the same Einonim Tereach the Suda Mafsida? Maybe the same Chazaka doesn't apply anymore because he's not being the one Tereach. So there's a discussion about that as well. In fact, actually, I believe the Taz says that in that case, then Taka, we don't believe him because then you don't have the Chazaka. Rav Moshe talks about this in another one of his Truvas, and he argues actually that no, given that the original requirement was for the Chosin to make the Suda, if instead the Kala is making it, effectively that becomes another lien on the Chosin. Effectively, he writes, the Chosin, when he has to pay off the Ksuba, he would have to include that amount also. They'd have to figure out how much the Kala's family paid towards the wedding, as long as it was a reasonable amount, and he'd have to include that as well in what he's paying. Whether anybody does that in practice, I don't know, but that's...
You can say the same for the Kala. If she already pays for the Suda and everything, then for sure his claim has to be pushed away, because she wouldn't do that
I mean, again, remember, Pesach Pesuach is kind of a subjective thing. Anyway.
It works for him, it should work for her.
Yeah, okay.
That was 50-50.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, nowadays more 50-50, that's another matter, yeah. I saw a vote, by the way, one reason why they changed this, why they changed the minhag that the Kala's family started paying for it, is because the Gemara says in Brachas, Kol Ananim is Suda Schosin, Veinim Samcha, anybody who enjoys the Suda of a Chosin and the Sameachim is violating five Kailas, so therefore they made it. It's not the Suda of the Chosin anymore, it's the Suda of the Kala, and that way you have a loophole. So therefore, nowadays, they make it that the Kala pays for the Suda, the Kala's family pays for the Suda. So it's not a Suda Chosin. So it's not a Suda Chosin. So it's not the Chosin Suda, and therefore you have a loophole. No, not that you shouldn't be Mesameach, but this way, in case you weren't Mesameach, you're not being
right.
Yeah. Okay, no, anyway, let's continue.
That's an old term.
Okay. There was a case of somebody who came to Rav Nachman, a Chosin, and he claims Pesach Pesuach. Amalei Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says to him, or rather to them, to the people who were there, Asbuhu Kufri, beat him with lulav branches. Kufri actually means mature branches, which have which have pointy, prickly things on them. And it would make him hurt. Why? Because Mevarechta is the name of a city, the zonus of the city named Mevarechta must be lying in front of him. In other words, he's a bacher. He's never married before. He's never supposed to have had relations before. How should he know what a Pesach Pesuach is?
Question.
That was the initial question. So therefore, Rav Nachman is saying, give him pech. Obviously, he's been fooling around. Tosfos explains differently. Tosfos explains that actually what he's saying is like this. Rav Nachman is saying, basically, I don't believe even that what he's saying is true. According to Rashi, in other words, saying is, yes, fine, we can believe him, Pesach Pesuach Matzasi, he knows what a Pesach Pesuach is, but he has no business knowing what a Pesach Pesuach is, so whip him. Tosfos says no. He shouldn't have any way of knowing what a Pesach Pesuach is. Mevorech to Chavitalei, according to Tosfos, is a question. Mevorech to Chavitalei, are the Zonis of Mevorech lying in front of him that he should have ever had any experience to know what a Pesach Pesuach is? Obviously not. He's just being Moti Shemra al Basulat Yisrael. He's saying Lashon Hara about a Jewish woman. Give him pech for that. Question is, Rav Nachman ud Am Meheman, didn't Rav Nachman before say that you believe him? The answer is, okay, Meheman must bin like Kufri. Sure, we believe him, but we also give him pech. According to Rashi, meaning in other words, yes, fine. If he's had experience before, then he knows what he's talking about, fine. So we can believe him, Pesach Pesuach Matzasi, with all the consequences that results in. But he shouldn't be knowing, and therefore he should get pech. According to Tosfos,
he claimed Pesach Pesuach that he himself had experience. By the way.
Yeah. No, he has had experience with other women.
Yeah.
Therefore, he's familiar with what's Pesach Pesuach and what's not.
I understand, but being that he had experience, how is he allowed to make a claim like that?
What do you mean? How is he allowed to? He's marrying a woman. He expects her to be a psula. Fine.
He's not.
What does one have to do with the other? She can be a psula. We expect. Put it this way. Morally, he should be a virgin as well. If he's expecting she should, morally he should as well. That's effectively what Rav Nachman is saying. Yes, there's no legal remedy, maybe, for example, for her to say, you know what, I thought I was marrying somebody who's inexperienced, and it turns out he's got a lot of experience with the local learnness of Mavardachta. She may not have, but after all, Beis Din should be giving him pech for that. And according to Tosfos, what the Gemara is saying is that Rav Nachman is Rav Nachman is not saying, like we assumed originally, that we don't believe him. No, we believe him, but obviously we're choshed him of znus. Rav Achoy Mashani, Rav Achoy answers differently. Kan b'bochu, kan b'nosui. One case is talking about a man who's never been married before. One's talking about a married man. If he's previously been married, we can believe him, obviously, and there's no reason to give him pech. Of course he has experience. If he's a bocher, then either, according to Rashi, we should believe him, fine, but we still give him pech. Or according to Tosfos, maybe we don't believe him to begin with, because how should he know? Another case, Havuda Asal Kameja Ram Gamliel, Amalei Pesach Pesuach Matzasi. Amalei, so Rabban Gamliel tells him, are you sure it was a Pesach Pesuach? Shema Hitesa. Maybe you went in sideways. We talked the other day about Hataya. So not necessarily. If you go straight in and you feel the psulim, you feel the resistance there. But if you go in sideways, sort of, then you may not. Let me give you an illustration to explain the idea. It's like a person who was walking in the deep, dark night. And he comes to his door. He comes to the door of his house. Hita, if he goes sideways and turns the door sideways, matzeh pasuach, and he'll find the doorway open, and he can go in. Lo hita matzeh nol. If he doesn't, if he tries to walk straight into the door, then he'll find it locked. Same idea. In other words, you have to turn the door, like, in order to get in. You can't walk straight into the door. Same way over here. Rav Gamliel is telling him.
What?
Yeah, it's sort of like turn the door. Yeah, like you have the doors on a hinge, right? You have to turn it. You have to turn the door on its hinge in order to go in. If you just walk straight in, if you just walk straight into the door, then you're just going to bang your nose. Same idea. I'm going to be always telling the guy.
The door is a bit open. If you walk straight in, you're going to bang your nose.
If it's not open, we're saying that.
Anyway, if you just
in other words, put it this way. What I'm going to be telling him is like this. The Besulim do not completely close off the area over there. I mean, a woman has to be able to menstruate all those years. So it's slightly open on the side, sort of. So therefore, Rav Gamliel is telling him, if you're going straight in, sure, you bang into the Besulim over there. But you may have gone in kind of at an angle, so they're there, but you didn't feel them.
And he didn't break them, right?
And he didn't break them necessarily, yeah. Ikadamri, a different version, Hachi Amalei, that Rav Gamliel tells him as follows, Shema b'mezid hitisa, maybe it was, the first way we say it is maybe accidentally he went in sideways. The second explanation is saying it's very unlikely that accidentally a person accidentally does sideways. No, maybe you went in very, very, very hard, deliberately, like going straight in, for a couch, a dosh of avra, and then you basically like tore out the door and their bolt straight out. In other words, instead of normally you would sort of break the basulim, and therefore as you're trying to get through, you would feel that pressure, you feel that resistance. Here you just like went straight in and then broke them without even realizing. Again, it's like a person who's walking in the deep, dark night. Again, if he pushes open the door deliberately, then he finds it open. But if he doesn't push it open deliberately, then he's going to find it. Then he's going to find it closed. So we learn from this, it says in Shulchan Aruch, it's brought therefore, if a person comes with Tainis P'solim, and already we've discussed a lot of the pros and cons of whether nowadays there really is even Tainis P'solim. Another detail, which we mentioned, by the way, is since nowadays the Kedushin and the Nisuin take place one right after the other, there's no Tainis P'solim where he could possibly claim that she might be also to him based on that she was Mizana after the Kedushin. The only concern would be if he's a kohen and if there's a concern that she might have been with a guy. The Tzemach Tzedek actually has a tshuva about a girl in his times in a city where there were a lot of goyim, where the chassan claim came after the wedding and claimed Pesach Pasuach. And the question, the chassan was a kohen, I guess, and the question was whether there was any possibility that she might have been with one of the goyim over there. And again, even if it was ba'onis, she'd still be also to her husband. And the Tzemach Tzedek goes into a long arichus with it, and he says that in the end, no. And he says actually he asked some local very tzniyistic girls to explain in a delicate way what's going on over here with the Solim, and they explained that yes, you know, a lot of times you can have similar to what Rav Gamliel is saying over here, that the Solim are there, but the Chassan may or may not feel them because they don't cover things completely up. So therefore, just because the Chassan is claiming Pesach Pasuach, in and of itself doesn't mean anything. But the point is, we see from this story with Rav Gamliel that one thing you do if the Chassan is coming and claiming a Tainis Solim, if he's claiming Pesach Pasuach, you have to ask him about the circumstances. Make sure, try to make it is going to be subjective after all, but try to find out as objectively as possible what he claims he felt or didn't feel. Again, all of this is we're assuming that we say there was, that we don't know whether there was blood. Either, as we'll learn on Amud Beis, she was from the family of Durkati, who didn't regularly have the Sulim blood or need the blood, or there was a cloth and they lost it. Another case. Somebody came to Rav Gamliel, the son of Rebbe. The previous Rav Gamliel was Rav Gamliel the Yavne, the grandfather of Rebbe. This is now Rebbe's son. He says, I didn't find blood. And again, this is a more serious claim. Dam means we have the cloth and there's no blood on it. That's a serious, that's serious business. So the woman said, the Kala says to him, Rebbe Besula, you see. No, I was in fact a Besula. So Rav Gamliel Rebbe said to them, bring me the cloth. They brought him the cloth, the sheet. He soaked it in water, and he washed it. And he found lots of blood on it. What happened? The blood was covered by shechas zera. The blood was covered by semen. Once he washed it and then got rid of that, then you could see the blood stains. So he said to the chassan, good, go enjoy the woman who you kind of. So Hunamar, the son of Ravam and Parzikya, asks Ravashi, why don't we do the same kind of thing? When we have a case of Baalti Velema Pasidam, why don't we do the same thing? Take the cloth and wash it and see if maybe the blood's covered with Shifa Zera. So Ravashi tells him we can't in Babel. Our laundering is not as good quality as theirs. What we have to do for our clothes to get them as clean as they get them in Eretz Yisrael, with laundering, we have to do gihut. Rashi says that gihut means that you scrape it with a glass stone, like a piece of obsidian maybe or something, whatever. There's various other mafarshim what gihut means exactly. That means washing it with detergent. In modern Hebrew, gihut means ironing, but that's not what we mean over here. Anyway, the point is, if we wash it like Rav Gamliel Berebi did, it wouldn't accomplish anything. It wouldn't get rid of the Shechla Sera. And if we do the Gihutz, which is what we do normally in Babel to get our clothes clean as they do in Eretz Yisrael, it's just their kibbutz. The problem is, the stone that you're rubbing it with will rub away any of the blood. So we don't have a way of doing that same kind of test here in Babel as they do in Eretz Yisrael.
What?
No, that's what we're saying. In Eretz Yisrael, they don't have to do gihutz. In Eretz Yisrael, kibbutz is enough. Here in Babel, he's saying, if we do kibbutz, that's not going to help anything anyway. The Shechla Sera is still going to be there. The blood is still going to be hidden underneath it. What would we have to do if we wanted to get rid of the Shechla Sera? We would have to do gihutz, and once we do, that would also scrape away the blood.
But they have different detergents.
Different detergents, or different quality of water, yeah. No, of course not. Another case, Ahuda also the Kamei de Ram Gamliel Berebi, the same Ram Gamliel Berebi, Amale, Rebbe Ba'alti Velem Atzati Dam, he says, I did the Be'ilah, I didn't find any blood. Amrele, so this time the woman says to him, Rebbe Adayin Besula Ani, I'm still a Besula. In other words, he didn't do a Gmar Bia, he didn't do a full Bia, or maybe he did do a Hita, or whatever it was, yes, I still have my Besulim. Amalehen, so Ram Gamliel tells them in that case, Havi Uli Shtei Shvachis, then bring me two maidservants, Achas Besula V'Achas Behula, one should be a Besula, one should already have had relations. Heviulo, they brought him these two maidservants. Varshivan up bechavis shoyayin, and he had each one sit on a barrel of wine. Ba'ula rechanoidif, then the one who had already had relations, the smell of the wine percolates from her. The Rogachover has a brief thing about this in one of his Trovus. He says it doesn't mean that you smell it on her breath. It means that you can smell it like kind of coming out of her pores of her skin. It gets absorbed from Oisimakim, and eventually I guess she probably has to sit on there for a while, and eventually the smell of it percolates out through her skin. The Sula ain't rechanoidif, whereas the Sula, it's more or less closed off, so therefore it doesn't smell like that. Having done the first test, then he sat this woman down on the barrel of wine, and again, no smell. Amalei said, Ram Gamliel tells him, good, she's right, she's still a psula. Go enjoy your kala. Now, the question is, why does he first need the two shvachas? Why didn't he just do the test directly with the woman herself? Put her on the barrel and see whether the smell. The answer... One second, and we'll talk about that in a second. The answer is Gemara have a shmiele, because Ram Gamliel Berebi had heard by tradition that this kind of test works. We learned in Yevamos that they did this with the girls from Yavish Gilad, when they had to find wives for Shevet Binyamin, after Shevet Binyamin was almost wiped out in Pelegish Begiva, a whole long story over there. They had 400, they wound up with a bunch of women who they weren't sure which ones were Be'ulis and which one not. And the Gemara says they did this wine barrel test. 400 of them passed the test, and they were Be'ulis. So Rabbi Gamliel Berebi had learned about that. Maisel I have a chazi. He had never seen it done in practice. Vesavar, so he figured, Duma le kimle begavod milsa, shaper. So in that case, I may not be certain of how the test works. I may not know how to do it properly. Velav orach arer lezal buli b'nei tisrael. And then it's not derech eretik to treat b'nei tisrael so contemptuously, to do such a test, and then start sniffing around her when you don't know whether it's going to work or not. So first use the shvachas, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, even
with
Rabbi Gamliel Berebi. So we're saying he did the first shvachas, which Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out. The Gemara explains in Nida that really you're not allowed to be mevayish your shvachas either.
Yeah.
So fine, but then the Gemara says the Gemara mentions in Nida an example where Shmuel one time had to do a physical experiment with one of his shvachas, and then afterwards he paid her for the embarrassment. So fine, the shvachas you could pay.
Maidservant.
Yeah, Shifra's maidservant, yeah. Yeah, where the Jewish woman is not even paying her, you don't first give her busha and then pay her. No, first you would have to do the test. Now, you're asking why didn't they just have women check her? So one answer is, in fact, that we do that in certain cases, basically when there's no other choice. For example, when you have to check whether a girl has Shtei Cyrus, then yes, you have no choice. The only way you're going to find out is to have women check and report their results to Beis Din. Here, there's an alternative. You have the wine barrel test, so therefore better to do that rather than relying on aegis of women. Rishonim and Achronim talk about the question, are we still able to do this test nowadays? And the Mefoshim on Shulchan Aruch talk about it, about that maybe not, maybe our wine is not necessarily the same quality of the wine from those days, etc. On the other hand, the Chassam Sofer seems to say that, yes, we could very well do this test nowadays. And in fact, he goes so far as to say, now that we have both the example from Tanakh and the example from the Gemara over here, we don't even need to do tests with maidservants first. We could directly, if we have a question whether a woman is a Pesula or not, we can directly go do the test. Another case, Ahuda also the Kamei Rav Gamliel HaZakin. Now we're back a few generations back to Rav Gamliel HaZakin, the grandfather of Rav Gamliel of Yavne. Omerloi, Chosin says to him, Rebbe Baalti Velema Pasidam. I did the Be'ila. I didn't find blood. Omerloi, the woman says to him, Rebbe Mishpachas Drukati Ami. I come from the family of Drukati. She'ein Lahem Loi Dam Nida Veloi Dam Besulim. In this family, they don't have blood of Nida, and they don't have blood of Besulim. We mentioned it briefly before, yeah. Bodek Ribben Gamliel Bekreve Seo Matze Kibreo. Sure enough, Ram Gamliel asked around among her female relatives, and he found indeed that so in that family. Yeah. So he tells him, go enjoy your kala, who you were kona, and he says, you should be happy, you should feel very fortunate that you were zeicha to marry into the family of Durkati. Wait one second. First of all, the Gemara explains why is the family called Durkati, my Durkati, Dur Katua. It stands for Dur Katua, a cut-off generation. So Rashi says they're cut off in the sense that they're cut off as in they don't have this kind of bleeding. Other Mephoshim talk about that it means cut off in the sense that they don't have very many children. Which Omer of Chanina, Tanchumim shall have on Nichma Ram Gamliel, La Isa Ish. In fact, Ram Gamliel, when he tells the guy, you're so lucky that you married into Mishpachas Durkati, actually he's telling him a false Tanchumim, kind of. He's trying to make him feel good, in other words, when he's telling him, you're lucky that you married into this family, actually the guy is not very lucky. Just as sourdough is good for dough, kach damim yafam leisha. So also bleeding is good for a woman. It means she's gonna get pregnant easily. And we learn a braisa in the name of a mayor. Call isha shadameh merubin b'nei merubin. A woman who has more bleeding is gonna have more children. So therefore, if he's telling him, look how lucky you are, you married into the family of Drukati, but they're not necessarily going to have very many children. Some of Farshim talk about, does that mean, in other words, could it be considered a mekach toth? Could he maybe argue, I would never have married her if I had known that she's from the family of Drukati? Not necessarily, because we're saying maybe that with less bleeding, there's going to be fewer children, but not necessarily that she's completely infertile. She can still have children. It's just she may have a harder time getting pregnant, but she still is capable of bearing children. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a family of Durkati. Itmar, so they said, a discussion on that. Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba Omer Zecheh B'Mekachach Amalei. Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba said that, in fact, Rabbi Gamliel told the guy, go be Zoicha in your wife. Whereas Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba says, no, he told him, you are obligated to the one who you married. Which Nishlem Lamando Amin Ischayev, if you say you're obligated, implying in other words basically tough luck, you're married to her and you're gonna have to live with it no matter what. Well, Hainu Dirab Chanina, then that fits with what Rabbi Chanina said. Because that she doesn't have very much bleeding, therefore she's gonna have a hard time getting pregnant and having children. So yes, in other words, it's a chayv for him. Rabbi Gamliel is telling him basically, tough luck. Ella Lamanda Amad Zechei, but according to the version that he actually told him Zechei b'mekachacha, and he meant it seriously, not ironically, not sarcastically or whatever. He meant you're zoicha, you've gained something. Well, my zchusa. The answer is Deloy Osi Lidei Sofik Nidya. There is an advantage. His wife will never be Sofik Nidya. There'll never be a Sofik whether she's Nidya or not. Which actually, one way of looking at it is it means she'll never be Nida, period, which means they won't have times when they need to be separated. Another way of looking at it, Rashi mentioned that the Rashi in Sanhedrin, that's where the Gemara mentions with their bracha, that you won't find your wife a Suffolk Nida when you come back from a trip. Actually, I think we had this in Yuvamas as well, that Rashi says, why Suffolk Nida? Because Mela, a person comes and finds his wife in Nida, okay, I know she's off limits, that's it. Suffolk Nida, you start second-guessing yourself, but is she really Nida? Am I really denying myself for nothing? So like this, if she never becomes Suffolk Nida, then you get out of that kind of thing. So that is a schluss. Because she doesn't have, because she's never need a period.
Not necessarily.
She has no dummim at all, we're saying. Yeah.
What about the fact you just...
She has no period.
She said,
no, no, he didn't say Pesach for Tzemach. He said, Loi Matzasi Dam. He didn't claim Pesach Pesach or not. Maybe he didn't know. Remember, if he's a Bachar, we said before a Bachar shouldn't be expected to know. No, anyway, okay. Another... No, but not necessarily, really, because, you know, put it this way, where does Dam Nidah come from? Every month the uterus starts getting a lining full of blood, and if an egg becomes fertilized and it implants over there and the blood nourishes it, etc. And the blood afterwards, if she doesn't become pregnant, then it has to be shed, and that lining gets shed, and that's a period. New in the case of this family of Dukati, maybe there's like just enough blood to keep a baby viable, but not so much that it's going to afterwards have to drain out. You know, maybe it can just get reabsorbed. I don't know. Anyway, another case. Hahud also came to Rebbe. Chosin came to Rebbe. Amale Rebbe ba'alti v'lanatzati dam. And the wife says to him, Rebbe, adayin besula hayisi. I was still a besula. Now, here it's not, I am still a besula, and therefore let's do the wine barrel test. I was still a besula. He's claiming he didn't find blood, but I was a besula. Now, ushnei batzoras hava. When this happened, it was years of famine. Ra Rebbe shepneim shchorim. So Rebbe noticed that their faces were black from hunger. So obviously, in other words, that's keeping her. So maybe that's keeping her from bleeding. And so he commanded his servants about them. They brought him into a bathhouse. They gave him to eat and to drink. And brought him into a private room. The chassan again did the beila, and this time there was blood. Yes, and he tells him, "No, good. Obviously, there's no problem." Kori Rebbe Aleihem, so Rebbe said on them, here you see an example of the pasuk from Eicha, Safad Oram al Asmam, their skin was Safad on their bones. Rashi gives two explanations of Safad. One it means like it stuck to their bones, and the other is it became black. Yavish Hayakait, it was dry like wood. In other words, Rebbe says here's a real life example where because of the famine, because of the hunger, because they were undernourished, therefore she was dried out, like she didn't have any. She couldn't bleed. Now, once they've been given to eat and drink, and then and moisten up a little, then yeah.
Very classy.
And thus, and again, this is also brought in Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. But again, if a person is claiming ba'alti v'lematzasi dam, one of the first things you check is to make sure that there's no problem of malnourishment or whatever.
That can stop
the bleeding. Apparently, yeah. Yeah.
She may not be able to see a menstruation period.
Well, here we're talking about Basulin, but yeah.
They starve themselves.
As a matter of fact, nowadays it's very common with women athletes, gymnasts or whatever, that they stop having periods for a while. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, let's continue with the next Mishnah. Mishnah says, Basula ksubasa mosayim va'almana mona. A Basula has a ksuba of 200 zuz, and an almana gets a mona. If she's b'sula almona grusha v'chalutzim in an erusin, if she's still a b'sula, she's not had relations yet, but she is an almona or grusha or chalutza mina erusin. So she was engaged to whatever, she was niskadish to somebody and then he divorced her or he died, or she was niskadish to her chos and then he died and then the yavam gave her chalutza. So either way, physically she's a b'sula. Ksubas and Masayim, then she still gets a ksuba of 200. You don't say that she's an almana or whatever it is, and therefore she only gets 100. No, the fact is she still has a chazaka of being a basula. V'yeshlahen tainas psulim, and in all those cases, the chosin can have a tainas psulim. If he doesn't find her a basula, if he claims pesach pasuach, or ba'al tivalem et sasi dam, then those claims have to be taken seriously, and we have to figure out the various things that we talked about. Whereas, in other words, if she had a chazaka of being a ba'ula, if he says ba'al tivel matzasi dam, a pesach patur matzasi, we tell him, well, what do you expect? What? He's only paying 100, right? So Gemara asks, my almana. Where does the word almana come from? Amar of Chana Bagata, almana al shem mana. She's called an almana because she gets a mana. Because she gets the mana for her ksuba. Various mefarshim talk about what exactly is the Gemara's question. I mean, okay, it's a word like any other word. What's the issue? One of them is so. One of them is that there's an explanation of Chassidus that when we say that the almona is almona, that she's lacking a mona. So there's a mimer of the Rebbe that talks about the idea, based on a mimer of the Rebbe Rashab, I think, that talks about the idea that the mona, which is 100 zuz, represents the nun sharik dusha going up, is surusa de la fata, and 50 coming down is surusa de la ela. And almona, specifically in Golos, Hoytzer Kalmona, we lack the ability to be able to do that. That hamshacha, that halah, and that hamshacha. Therefore, we're lacking the 100. Therefore, we're almona. We're minus 100.
Minus
100. That's right. But then the question is, so why almona? And Marsha points out. So what? A widower is called almon. So, okay, fine. Once a woman has to be called an almona, then okay, the male equivalent is almon. Yes, in that mimer, it does also talk about the deeper idea that almona is related to the word ilayim, because a widow or a widower, like, they're unable to speak, and that's also how we are in Golos, that we're not able to speak properly. Anyway, the Gemara asks, okay, almona min erusin ma'ikol neima. New, what are you going to say about an almona from erusin, where we said she gets 200 zuz, the Mishnah said. Why is she called an almona? Okay, I did the ha kari la amana, hanami kari la amana. Once we call a regular amana who's already a ba'ula, we call her amana, so we call this one also amana. Actually, come to think of it, one of the explanations, what the Gemara is asking, why is she called an amana, is basically, a basula, we understand, you have to have a term for a basula. Once she's already had relations, why do we need separate terms, ba'ula versus amana, etc.? Why do we need a separate term for amana? And the answer is Hashem mana. Okay, almana d'chtivu b'raisa ma'ikol neima. What are you going to say about the fact the word almana appears in the Torah? What are you going to say about that? The answer is d'asidin rabbanan d'misakni l'almana. It means she's a woman who, in the future, the chachamim are going to be misakin. We learned in Amud Aleph that everybody agrees that the ksuba of an almana is only the rabbanan. In the future, the rabbanan will make a takana that she gets only a mona. Question is, does the Torah talk like that, mentioning things, naming things about what's going to happen with them in the future? No. The answer is, ain't. Yes, in fact, dichtiv, as we find by the four rivers that came out of Gan Eden, v'shem anora shlishi chidekel, the name of the third river is chidekel, the Tigris, hu ahelach kidmas Asher, is the river that flows to the east of Asher. Matana Rav Yosef, Asher is Silica. And Rav Yosef says that Asher is Silica, the name of a certain city. Now, the point is, at the time when the world was created, did that area Asher exist yet? It was only called Asher much later. El Das Sida, it means it was going to be called Asher in the future. Hachanami Das Sida, see, but there we hear also the Torah saying Almana, that in the future there will be a Takana of Almana. So Tosfos asks the question, how do you compare? Asher as a country already existed in Moshe Rabbeinu's times. It already had the name Asher. Therefore, fine, when Moshe is writing the Torah, when the Eishter is dictating to Moshe the Torah and he's writing it down, fine, he's going to say Kidmas Asher. But in Moshe's times, we didn't have the mona yet. We didn't have the takana of the mona yet. We didn't even have a unit of measurement called a mona. Actually, the unit itself existed in Babel, but didn't exist in the Torah system of measurement. There's no such thing as a mona. So what's the comparison? The Tosfos explains, the vote is, that's why the Gemara makes a point of mentioning that Asher is Slita. Usually we would think Asher is a country, Assyria in English, northern Iraq, basically. No, what the Gemara is saying over here is that Asher actually means here a specific city called Slita. That city did not exist in Moshe's times yet. And yet the Torah is saying, that this river flows to the east of the place, which a few hundred years from now, there is destined to be built there a city which will be called Asher. Same thing then with Almana. The Rashash, by the way, has a bit of a funny vote about this Almana business. He points out, in Arabic, you have the word al before a lot of words, alcohol, al-Qaeda, etc. It means the. So Almana is called that because she has the mana, is her ksuba. The Rashash writes that. Since we mentioned something that Rav Chana Bagata said, here's another one. V'amar Rav Chana Bagata, Motar Mashke, the rain gives the ground to drink. Marve, it slakes its thirst. Umezabel, it fertilizes the ground. Umaaden, it makes it gives the fruit a good shine and a good taste. Umamshich, and it draws forth. Then it draws forth the fruit out of the trees. He's not darshaning based on the next drasha that we're going to have in the Gemara is going to be where we take a word and actually break it down into its components. Here we're not. Here we're not saying the word mutter stands for these things. He's just explaining you should know something about rain that it has these five advantages. The Ben Yahyada explains the part is that rain is associated with gvura. That's why we call it gvuras kishamim. We know throughout Kabbalah and Chassidus that there's hay gvuras. There's five aspects of gvura. Therefore, the Gemara mentions over here five good things that rain brings. Amar of Abba Rabbi Shmuel, B'tamer Rabbi Yehmer Bar Shlemya, Maikra, what's the pasuk that expresses where we see that rain does all these five things? The pasuk says, Tlameha, the furrows, the holes that are dug in the ground for the plowing of Eretz Yisrael, Rave, you should slake the thirst. So there's the mashken marve, that it gives the earth to drink and slakes its thirst. Naches gedudeha, make its armies be satisfied. Birvivim to megagena, you soften it with showers. So the megagena is the equivalent of mezabel, fertilizing the ground. Simcha tavarich, and bless its produce, what grows from it. So there's the other two things about the fruit, mamshich, that it draws forth the fruit, and ma'adin, that it gives it a nice shape and smell and aroma and so forth. Another similar drasha, Amar Rav Elazar, mizbeach, mezin maziach umezin mechabev mechaper. Here actually we're taking the word mizbeach and breaking it down that it stands for these things. So on the face of it, meziach means that it removes. So it sounds like it removes. It sounds like it means it removes aravirus. Umezin, it provides mazin in the source of the korbanos. The world is sustained. Mechabev, it makes us beloved to Hashem. Mechaper, and it brings a kapara. So the question is, Gemara asks, "Haina mechaper, haina meziach? Isn't mechaper and meziach the same thing? If meziach means taking away aravirus, the answer is no. Meziach zerus and mechaper aravirus. It means it removes zerus and it's mechaper on aravirus." The Rebbe once talked about in a sicha that the four things, well, that Marsha mentions actually over here, that the four things we're mentioning over here correspond to four different types of things that are brought on the Mizbeach. The Keteres, the Oila, the Chatas, and the Shlomim. The Keteres removes Gzeres. The Chatas is Mechaper on Avonis. The Shlomim makes us beloved to Hashem, and the Oila, in the source of the Oila, we get our sustenance. Did everyone talk to Sicha and put it slightly differently, that we have three basic types of korbanos, one of which you have Chatas and Asham, which are basically the same kind of thing, but you have the Oila makes us beloved to Hashem, because like the Oila is like a gift to Hashem. The Shlomim in the source of that we have our sustenance, and the Chatas and the Asham are the Meziach and the Mechater. And the Rebbe also wants to talk about the idea that you see how beloved we are to Hashem, that even before Mechaper, even before you've gotten to the point of that the Averis are removed, already you have the Meziach, that the Averis themselves are removed, and Mezin and Mechaber, and only afterwards, fine, you know, then we can deal with the Kapara afterwards. First comes the good stuff. Yeah.
We continue tomorrow. That's